evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, February 12, 2019. The UN Refugee Agency says thousands of South Sudanese have crossed into the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Among them are people suffering from malaria or other illnesses. Many have suffered from trauma after witnessing violent incidents, including armed men reportedly murdering and raping civilians and looting villages.
And rights groups call on South Sudanese authorities to investigate the disappearance of two South Sudanese in Kenya.
So that means that the families of these two gentlemen have been left in limbo. Don't know where their relatives are. They don't know whether they are dead or alive.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Refugee Agency says a surge of violence in South Sudan's Yei River State has displaced some 8,000 civilians and sent an estimated 5,000 people fleeing to the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
Clashes between the South Sudanese Army and a rebel group, the National Salvation Front, or NAS, broke out on January 19th. This was barely 4 months after the latest peace deal aimed at ending the country's five-year civil war was signed by President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar. UN Refugee Agency spokesman Babar Baloch tells VOA, violence has been going down since then, and he says the two major parties that signed the accord appear to be sticking to it.
Let's not forget, South Sudan has over 70 factions in terms of small groups and rebel groups. And NAS, as far as I understand, is led by Thomas Cirilo. And we also understand that his group refused to sign the peace agreement.
The fighting reportedly is taking place outside the town of Yei, close to the borders of the Democratic Republic of Congo and Uganda. Baller says most of those fleeing by foot to Congo are women, children, and the elderly. He says they arrive exhausted, hungry, thirsty, and in some cases sick.
Among them are people suffering from malaria or other illnesses. Many have suffered from trauma after witnessing violent incidents, including armed men reportedly murdering and raping civilians and looting villages.
The refugees are arriving in remote border villages in Congo's Ituri province, an area close to Ebola-affected North Kivu province. A World Health Organization spokesman says there is no indication the disease has spread to this region, but he says the risk is there, so border crossings are being monitored carefully. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Authorities in Yei River State say thousands of people who have been displaced due to the recent fighting between government and rebel forces in several villages need relief. The Relief and Rehabilitation Commission Coordinator for Yei River State says up to 6,000 internally displaced people are living under trees on the outskirts of Yei town. Daniel Friday-Martin reports for VOA from Yei.
Fighting between government forces and National Salvation Front rebels led by General Thomas Rilo began earlier this month, forcing thousands to either flee to rural areas several miles outside of Yei town or to the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo. Cyprus Ibemi says he fled deadly fighting that broke out on the far end of Lujulo County early last week. Speaking in local Kakwa, Cyprus says both of his two children are suffering from malaria and he has no money to pay for their treatment.
Since our arrival on Monday last week, we were not given medical assistance. I am saying this because some of our children are suffering inside the shelter without medication. I'm calling on the NGOs available to look into the conditions of the IDPs who fled violence in the villages.
Jane Dawar, another internally displaced person, says in her native Kakwa dialect that displaced villages have no food or drinking water.
What I have seen so badly is that since we fled from our villages for the last 5 days, we did not get food, saucepans, and even blankets. We are suffering and children are crying amidst us without food to eat. I am requesting the NGOs in Yei to help us.
IDP James Guerra, a father of six, says in Kakwa that women and children are suffering in particular and is pleading for help.
We ran to this place because we have witnessed bad things in our village. We are staying here without access to clean water. Children are drinking dirty water, and we are calling on the government and non-governmental organizations to rescue us from this situation.
Moses Mabe, the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission Coordinator for Yei River County, says the county and state governments lack the funds needed to help the nearly 7,000 IDPs who fled the recent fighting in and around Yei.
The households are 1,354, and the population, individuals, are 6,770, which are really in need of help. Help for food. If possible, non-governmental organizations, even the international organizations, should help intervene to rescue the situation. More especially, the government is unable to, you know, to accommodate, even to help those who are coming to sustain them within this period here.
Several humanitarian organizations operating in the area say they too lack the funds necessary to provide humanitarian assistance to all the displaced. Dara Elisa, Program Manager for the United Methodist Committee on Relief in Yei River State, says most aid agencies are still assessing the needs of the IDPs without providing immediate aid.
In terms of the intervention to these IDPs that have just arrived, actually, in terms of resources, we have little resources to respond to the number that is overwhelming daily. So this is a gap that exists there, so we are appealing to the partners at the Juba level if they can be able to trickle down resources so that the partners on ground can be able to respond effectively to this kind of crisis.
In a statement issued today, the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, said at least 5,000 Sudanese refugees fleeing fighting in Yei River State have arrived in neighboring DR over the past few days. It says an additional 8,000 people are displaced inside South Sudan on the outskirts of Yei town. UNHCR said those fleeing the violence, mostly women, children and the elderly, arrived by foot over the weekend and looked exhausted, hungry and thirsty. Eugene Bayun, the UNHCR communications office in Juba, is urging the warring parties to end the fighting and to guarantee the safety of humanitarian access trying to intervene.
We have access challenge to those IDPs, and then we are somehow blocked by both parties. So that's why we're calling all the parties to the conflict to take action to ensure the safety of the civilians first, and then their freedom of movement second, and then access for the humanitarian actors.
Chapter 2 of the South Sudan's Revitalized Peace Agreement, signed in September last year, urges the parties to respect the free movement of all civilians and allow unfettered access to humanitarian workers. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei Town.
Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International are calling on the governments of Kenya and South Sudan to carry out investigation into the disappearance of two South Sudanese critics. Lawyer Samuel Deng Luak and SPLA-IO official Agri Idri in Nairobi, both of whom disappeared more than 2 years ago. South Sudan's information minister says the Kiir administration will not investigate the matter. Onen Walter Solomon has the story for VOA from Juba.
In a joint statement issued today, Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International said the families of Dong Samuel Luak and Agri Isborn Idri have been waiting patiently for the truth for far too long, and failure to investigate the disappearance denies the families of the two men justice. Saif Magango is the Amnesty International's Deputy Director for East Africa.
It's been 2 years since Dong and Agri were abducted from Nairobi and taken to South Sudan. We have evidence that they were last
team in South Sudan at Blue House, a court in Kenya that was overseeing the police investigation into their disappearance recently judged that police did their job according to the law, and as a result is no longer overseeing the investigation. So that means that the families of these two gentlemen have been left in limbo. Don't know where their relatives are. They don't know whether they are dead or alive.
But South Sudan Information Minister and government spokesman Michael Makuei insists the government does not need to investigate the matter because the two men disappeared on foreign soil.
Then how do we clarify it now if they disappeared? As long as they admit that they have disappeared in Kenya, where do we come into it? How do you expect us to comply in an event in which the government of South Sudan is not a party? We are not a party to whatever you are saying.
Magango says both the Kenya and South Sudan governments should understand they have obligations under international law and their own constitutions and are answerable for the disappearance of Dong and Idri.
The fact that the government of Kenya has been unable or unwilling to fully investigate and disclose where these people and the circumstances under which they were renditioned to South Sudan, as well as the government of South Sudan completely keeping silent and ignoring calls for information about these two gentlemen, does not absolve the two governments of their international responsibilities and their duty to ensure that people are safe and protected and to disclose where these two individuals are to their families and to the rest of the world.
Magango says both governments must change their tune and cooperate in efforts to find the men. Makuei urges both Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch to officially bring their concerns directly to the government regarding the disappearance of the two men.
Amnesty International is supposed to direct its talk correctly. It's not a question of giving any statements and making elusive questions and demands. Yes, these people are South Sudanese citizens, but they disappeared in Kenya while in their rebellion.
The rights groups say the Kenyan police have never officially requested information from the South Sudan government, nor has South Sudan's government investigated their disappearance or officially requested information about the case from Kenyan authorities. For VOA News, I am Onen Walter Solomon in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the number of measles cases in the United States has jumped. Find out what's being done about it when we come back right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you fear losing the most?
The peace that we enjoy in my country. Ghana is a very peaceful place and we are well noted for that, and I want it to continue.
Losing most my friends, my family members. When it comes to death, I fear losing anyone close to me.
I fear losing my peace of mind. I fear losing love from people. Sometimes you are there and you fear that people are not really showing that love. That's the two things I fear most.
I fear losing my life because it is important and it helped me to assist the life of other people, because the life is most important to the community and we love each other.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. And today we are talking about preventing the spread of measles. Health officials in the United States are urging parents to get their children vaccinated for measles after a spike in the number of cases. On February 5th, there were 50 cases reported in the state of Washington and another 5 cases in Houston, Texas. VOA's Carol Pearson reports most of the cases are in unvaccinated children.
Measles was eliminated in the U.S. 19 years ago. The only cases now are those that are imported from other countries, but that's happening with greater frequency. Dr. Camille Sabella is a pediatric infectious disease specialist at the Cleveland Clinic.
Measles is incredibly contagious. Once it gets around the community, it's very difficult because it's airborne.
18 states allow parents not to vaccinate their children if they have moral, personal, or philosophical objections to it. A measles outbreak in the northwestern state of Washington has health officials scrambling to contain it. Dr. Jason Hanley sees emergency cases at the medical center Peace Health.
I hope I'm wrong, but I think the cases are going to get more frequent and spread throughout the country from this epicenter.
Rural areas in the U.S. tend to have higher numbers of unvaccinated children, but there are significant numbers in cities such as Houston, Austin, and Seattle, where immunization rates are lower than in other U.S. cities. Houston just reported 2 new cases of measles in children under the age of 2, bringing the total to 5 as of February 6th. Doctors, including U.S. Surgeon General Jerome Adams, are urging parents to get their children vaccinated.
As the United States Surgeon General, I want everyone to know that the best protection against measles is getting vaccinated.
The measles vaccine is almost 100% effective. Doctors recommend that children get 2 doses.
One dose of vaccine, about 95% of children will become protected against measles. The reason that we give a second dose is because about 5% of children do not respond to the first dose. So with 2 doses, over 99% of children are protected against measles.
Measles makes people very sick, and it's especially dangerous for young children. At Children's National Medical Center, Dr. Roberta DiBiase works as an infectious disease specialist.
1/3 of those cases will end up hospitalized, and that may be due to a variety of complications.
Complications such as pneumonia or encephalitis, a swelling of the brain, can be deadly or lead to permanent disability. That's why doctors urge parents to get their children vaccinated. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Rwanda's Justice Ministry is launching Anti-Corruption Week to bolster the fight against corruption in all institutions, including the justice offices. Though the government has created measures to fight corruption, some people think the laws seem to target the poor and spare those in high government posts. Eugene Uimana has more from Kigali.
In 59 cases of corruption in the court system, many suspects are listed as jobless. The Deputy Chief Justice Kaitesi Sidivisa Inabo explains this image of corruption suspects from last year and the beginning of 2019. When you analyze the level that include many suspects, 23 are qualified as unemployed or farmers, 19 drivers, and 14 small businessmen. That leaves the identified big fish that are invisible to most people or are considered to be untouchable. One name has become familiar nationwide. Caleb Yilingiro is a small businessman in Kigali. He explains how it's a pity that the system pursues suspects who eat little money to get their services delivered, but lets those who swallow billions in public funds run free.
Look! We always hear people who were found guilty of corruption are drivers, motorcyclists, who eat 2,000 or 500. But what about those in high government institutions? The Auditor General annually releases reports of how public institutions misuse the money, or the Parliament summons different leases of embezzlement of public funds, but they don't get punished. They keep enjoying their salaries. That's unjust.
For Ingabire Makile, the chairperson of Transparency International Rwanda, those big fishes who misuse the government money have high responsibilities and powers that help them stay out of touch. Who are those named big fishes? You find them in sensitive public service, in infrastructure, and in very respectful offices. That is worse than a simple corruption. It is embarrassment. Jean Bosco Mutangana, the prosecutor general, also admits that some high-level officials get involved in corruption. He pledges to do everything to bring them to court with the new law that punishes embarrassment as corruption. But he warns that dragging them is not easy. We normally say that none is above the law, but we admit that there are powerful persons in the country. We can't wait to catch them. Those who deal with public tenders, those who deal with the government budget, leaders in different levels, get heavily in corruption. I can't deny to bring them to book is not easy, but the new law of following them as corruption suspects will highly help us. Rwanda is running ranked third least corrupt country in Africa, according to the 2018 Corruption Perception Index. Globally, Rwanda is the 48th least corrupt nation, improving 2 places from 2016. But critics say these figures may not include the invisible corrupt officials and businessmen. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
From Kigali, we move to Juba, where the Juba Council plans to start imposing fines on people caught littering the streets of the capital. The deputy mayor of Juba says the measure is aimed at keeping Juba clean. Winnie Chirino has more for VOA from Juba.
Juba City Deputy Mayor Niall Majak Niall says the fines will range from 2,000 to 10,000 South Sudanese pounds, or $8 to $38, depending on the amount of trash. He says polythene bags and plastic soft drink and water bottles remain the biggest environmental threat in the country. Niall believes the fines will help reduce littering in city streets.
When you are aboard a vehicle or on a motorbike and you open your window and you drop some litter, a water bottle or whatever litter you drop from the car or on a motorcycle, you would be fined with 10,000 South Sudanese pounds. And then if you are a pedestrian, after using something or just happen to have some garbage in your hand and drop it, and we go as small as a cigarette butt, we'll charge you 5,000 South Sudanese pounds.
And those who carry plastic bags will be fined 2,000 South Sudanese pounds. Juba resident Manmun Lam agrees with the stiff fines for those who litter the city, adding Juba should look clean just like the capitals of other neighboring countries.
That decision is a good idea because it will reduce contamination and exposing bottles, exposing dirty things on the road. So I need city council to design a specific place where we can expose those bottles and those dirty things.
Joseph John, a street vendor in Juba's Konyokonyo taxi park, says oftentimes customers buy fruit from him and seconds later dump the rubbish anywhere they please. He says many South Sudanese have no knowledge or incentive to keep the environment clean. But John says Juba City Council officials issued several orders about littering in the past, none of which were ever enforced. In December 2017, the Juba City Council issued a ban on the sale and use of plastic bags. That order was observed for only a few weeks. And John says he doubts people will obey the law this time.
Because people are used to that. Well, whenever someone takes all water, all these bananas that we sell, they just end up throwing rubbish anywhere. They feel like so. I'm not sure that it will be a very thing to stop. If people are very much used, it has to be a gradual process whereby people have to be given time.
Deputy Mayor Niall says the city council is working to educate residents on how to keep city streets clean. He says pamphlets are being drafted that will be distributed to schools, churches and mosques to sensitize people about the environment. He says the Juba City Council will also place rubbish bins in public places, including bus parks, to discourage people from littering. But if they do litter, they'll be fined.
We are going to use our units, our security personnel. We are going to put them in key places, in the market, seeing people dropping things, give them instant arrest. And then on the streets, we'll let the people be parked there with the cars and chase after the people. The first responsibility is, if it is a public transport vehicle, we are giving responsibility first to the driver and the person who have littered. These two people will take both fines.
Niel says, if fines do not stop residents from dumping garbage on the streets, the council may resort to arresting and detaining offenders for periods of up to a week to deter the practice. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The United Nations Refugee Agency says an uptick in violence in South Sudan's Yei area has displaced some 8,000 civilians and sent an estimated 5,000 people fleeing to the neighboring DRC. Yei River State officials say thousands of people have been displaced due to the fighting that's between government and rebel forces in several villages in the southern part of the state. The Relief and Rehabilitation Commission coordinator for Yei River County says some IDPs are living under trees on the outskirts of Yei Town. Fighting between National Salvation Front rebels led by Thomas Cirillo and government troops began earlier this month. Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International are calling on the governments of Kenya and South Sudan to carry out what they call effective, transparent, and impartial investigations into the forced disappearance of two South Sudanese critics, lawyer Dong Samuel Luok and SPLA-IO official Agri Idri in Nairobi, both of whom vanished more than 2 years ago. South Sudan's information minister says the Kiir administration will not investigate the matter. The two groups said in a statement today that the families of the men have been waiting patiently to hear what's happened to their loved ones for far too long, and that failure to investigate the disappearances denies the families of the two men justice. And finally, the Juba City Council plans to start imposing fines on people caught littering in the streets. The deputy mayor of Juba says the measure is aimed at keeping the capital clean and green. Juba City Deputy Mayor Niel Majak Niel says the fines will range from 2,000 to 10,000 South Sudanese pounds. That's about $8 to $38, depending on the offense. He says plastic bags and plastic soft drink and water bottles remain the biggest environmental threat. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We'll leave you with the song Endena Beled Jadid. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Let's know what you think about this show. Our email is at southsudanvoanews.com. If you're planning to be out of Juba where you cannot hear us on an FM radio station, you can still listen to us on shortwave. Our frequencies are 11850 kilohertz, 13865 kilohertz, and 15180 kilohertz. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Kawajat wamundo kurat macha fitono Sudan, mahina kan gaidi kwe singing.